Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is January 23rd, 2016. I am Matt, your host, and we're going to be here live for the next, I think, 88 minutes, give or take 30 seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, we always have something going on here, so I've got these notes so I don't forget anything, but there's so much going on at Aaron's High Cap Adventures that sometimes I have to talk about it now. Otherwise, the show will be over before I can even mention it all. That's how fast things go around here. So let me do that now on a few subjects. One, immediately after this show, I've got to race right back to Cameron to teach another sold-out license to carry class, which is awesome, by the way. And because of it being sold out, I opened up another class for tomorrow. That's Sunday at 2 p.m., and there's spots still available. So if you want to go to that class, give us a call here at the studio. The phone lines, there may be a problem with the phone lines, but you can try anyway. If you get through, we'll take your name. The number's 254-773-1400. It's 254-773-1400. Or you can call me at Aaron's Gun Shop at 254-697-4721. Or send me an email, aaronsgunshop@gmail.com, or go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com, and sign up there. I don't think there's a sign-up because it was so quick. Just give me a call at the shop. It's a lot of fun, and we're going to go over a lot of good, usable information. Now, once again, next Saturday, January 30th, we'll be doing a live remote at the Real Gun Show in Brenham. Myself and the crew will be there, as well as the laser training booth, which everyone just loves, by the way. The ladies will be there giving out information on all the classes, and I'll be giving on-the-spot training with the laser booth, at the laser booth. And I also want to say publicly thank you very much to my consultants, Patty and Jerry Ann. They do a fantastic job. They keep me straight, keep me organized, and I'd be all over the place because we've got so much going on here if they weren't there to help me out. So I appreciate it very much. Thank you, ladies. Number three. Now, while at the gun show in Brenham, I will have a special guest, and that's going to be Trooper Jimmy Morgan, DPS Trooper Jimmy Morgan. Trooper Morgan has his own radio show called Let's Talk Traffic on a local station there in Brenham, as well as the one Cameron station, 105.1 The Ranch. And I was invited onto his show to talk about, you know, with his listeners about license to carry. So I'm going to get him on mine so we can see the trooper side of things when it comes to license to carry and other topics as well. Now, ladies and gentlemen, to keep up with all that's going on, just go to aaronsgunshop.com. Check out all the pages. Be sure to become part of our newsletter. Go to the blog page of aaronsgunshop.com for that. Then check out the videos, the pictures, read the testimonials, sign up for a class, buy some products, go to a seminar, all sorts of things you can do to help support the show. So aaronsgunshop.com. Check it out. I think you'll like what you're going to find there. So we're going to move on. And we're going to talk about the show's highlights today. In today's CHL License to Carry segment, we're going to go over Penal Code 4602. We'll go over the details of what it means to have a weapon on or about your person and who's legal to do that. Again, I'm going to read three or more stories from the American Rifleman's column, The Armed Citizen, and glean as much as we can from those true stories. My pep section today will go over the bug out vehicle and how to properly prepare it in case of an unexpected emergency. Remember, we talked about the bug out body, the bug out bag, the bug out vehicle, the bug out location. Well, today we're going to focus on the bug out vehicle. Ladies and gentlemen, lots of things interest me, and today's topic of interest is going to be knives versus guns. Which one is more dangerous? Well, depending on who you ask, you may get many different answers. So we're going to go over that a little bit as well. Again, our friends at Blackjack Firearms are gun manufacturers and have done lots of work for me. And today we're going to discuss the choice of either a gas piston bolt carrier group or a direct impingement bolt carrier group for your next AR build. We'll get into the details on that. My gun training demo is about keeping your eye on the threat all the while maintaining your skill at arms. Very important information there. And my special guest today will be Police Chief Randy Dixon. He's been on before. Great interview before. We've got some good stuff going on with him. The chief has been here before answering great questions with great answers. But this time we're going to be talking to him about how to start up a neighborhood watch. So if you ever thought about it, if your area is in question for, you know, particular crimes, we can start up a neighborhood watch, and we're going to talk all about that. I'm excited to announce that our newsletter, Common Ground, has launched on our website, and I'll read through some of the headlines of that newsletter to give you a taste of it, and hopefully you, the listener, will become part of the newsletter. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, if time permits, I shall read another WTF moment, because those can be funny, scary, or just plain outrageous. All right, everybody, so now you know what's coming up. Let's get right into the show here. Let's get into License to Carry segment, and the topic is going to be Penal Code 4602, Unlawful Carry. And there's still questions or guesses as to how to carry in the open with a license to carry. So we're going to read and break it down and hopefully clear things up. And what I've got here, I'm going to actually take advantage of the police chief here, because I may ask him a couple questions when we're talking. And Paul, we might need to get Chief Mike here so he can get on. And we're going to read from Penal Code 4602, and it reads unlawful carrying of a weapon. I'll read it and then we'll discuss it a little. This section does not apply to a person in possession of a valid license and carrying a handgun. Now, remember that, in possession of a valid license and carrying a handgun. This section does not apply what I'm about to read. Section A1 and A2. A person commits an offense if the person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly carries on or about his or her person a handgun, illegal knife, or club, if the person is not, one, on the person's own premises or premises under the person's control, or two, inside of or directly en route to a motor vehicle that is owned by the person or under the person's control. And, you know, Chief, we're going to talk about that, too. It's not so much the legal way to carry in the open, but how people who don't have a license. So we're going to break that down. Now, Section A1, a person commits an offense if the person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly carries on or about his or her person a handgun in a motor vehicle or watercraft that is owned by the person or under the person's control at any which time, one, the handgun is in plain view, unless in a shoulder or belt holster under the license to carry. And that's where the question comes in. Since it's on or about your person and you have a license to carry, the question is, what does that really mean, on or about your person? Or number two, the person is A, engaged in criminal activity other than a Class C misdemeanor that is a violation of law under ordinance regulating traffic, B, prohibited by law from possessing a firearm, or C, a member of a criminal street gang as defined in Section 7101. All right. So that was the law, and you're probably going with your finger to your lip, blah, 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 right? What did I just say? Let's break it down into two segments here. The first segment is, if you don't have a license, what can you do? Or how can you carry the weapon without being illegal in how you do it? So let's give an example. If I don't have a license, the question would be, Chief, and I'm going to introduce you on later on, but I want to get you in here tidbits. I don't have a license, and I'm going from my house to my car, from point A to point B, and I have that weapon. Can I carry it in the open, and can I carry it concealed going from my house to my car if I don't have a license?
If you don't have a license, the way the law is written, and it's confusing at best, the fact is that it has to be concealed, whether you are traveling or whether you're at a stationary place. If you're going to your vehicle, it has to be concealed, is the way that most of it is written.
I totally agree. That's what it says, and that's the clarification. Once again, if you don't have a license, yes, you can carry the weapon concealed from your house to your car. You cannot carry it in the open. Now, Chief, we get to our car, and we go to HEB, and we want to go from our car to HEB, can we take the gun at that point?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not. You need a license to carry to be able to do that, either concealed or in the open. Now, here's the question a lot of people ask. What if I go from my car to the hotel? Can I take my weapon concealed if I don't have a license and go to the hotel?
One of the questions you have to ask, is that your domicile for the night? If that's going to be your domicile for the night, you have the right to protect yourself in a domicile. It, by all indications, I believe it's legal. Now, the question is going to be what jurisdiction you're in. Are they going to consider it legal? But as they say, I would rather take chance.
The other thing, too, is I totally agree with what you're saying. The only other thing there would be is if the owner of the hotel decides to put up a Penal Code 30-06 and 30-07 sign and says, I don't want guns in here, period.
That's correct.
So You can, but it's confusing because if you're going to go to your domicile and yet they post the signs and you can't go there, it kind of makes you wonder. I'm still not sure on that one.
Right, and it, and I don't. I'm not sure anybody is 100% sure on that. What I would believe that you would do is when you're in your vehicle, obviously it has to be concealed, but you put it inside something and take it into your room. Transport and obviously when you're in the room, that's your domicile for the night. Say it was an apartment for the night. And then when you get ready to leave, you take it back with you in a concealed manner back to your vehicle.
That's right. All right, so we have a fine line to walk there, whether you have a license or not. There's two different ways you can do it, but do it with a fine line. And I teach that in the class as well. We go over into more depth. We're doing a five-minute segment here. We have to touch on it real quick. Chief, let's talk about honor about your person. Let's clarify that. Honor. I'll give you an example. I have a license to carry. And I'm about to go outside, and there's my gun on the table, and the holster's right here that I would attach to my hip. I put the gun in the holster, and I walk out the door with the gun in the holster in my hand. Is that technically about my person?
If you have a license to carry, absolutely it is.
Okay. So it doesn't make a difference if I got it in my hand, or I attach it to my belt, or if it's a shoulder rig that I haven't put on my shoulders yet. Technically, and ladies and gentlemen, the reason I do this, I get fanatical on definition so everybody understands. And I'll give you a perfect illustration of what I mean. Before C.J. Grisham got arrested for that rifle out in the open, I would ask 10 different people what's the legalities of carrying a rifle. I would get 10 different answers. Today, you have absolutely no doubt that you can carry a long gun out in the open, loaded, ready to go, as long as it's not done in a threatening manner. You can carry it. That's what I want to get when it comes to license to carry, that everybody understands when it comes to persons wearing the badge, law enforcement, and the ones who don't wear the badge, law enforcement. Everybody's on the same sheet of music. Okay. Honor about your person. So that kind of clears it up. If you want to get further into a class like this, give us a call. Sign up for one of the CHL classes. But honor about your person is valid for a license to carry individual. You can see it out in the open as long as it's in a holster. Honor about your person. Okay. We're going to close that up. That can go on for another 30 minutes, that conversation, but I don't want to spend 30 minutes on the radio doing that. So we're going to move on to the next section. We're going to move to the NRA Armed Citizens section. And in this section, I'm going to read to you three stories from the NRA's Armed Citizens page, The American Rifleman. And hopefully from these true stories, we can learn what to do and what not to do, and maybe even get a laugh or two in the process. It all depends on the story, and sometimes we got some funny stories. Now, if you're not a member of the NRA, you might consider becoming one, because the more gun supporters they have, the more muscle they have to stop bad legislation. And that's the last thing we want, is bad legislation. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I've got three stories in my hand here, and they're all from March of 2002. The first story here, I read. A businesswoman thwarted a robbery in her store when she responded to a man's demand for cash by pulling her 9mm handgun. Aaron Moll, owner of the Carlisle, Pennsylvania bookstore, said she felt the man was up to something soon after he entered the store. He came in about 10 minutes before 6 and says, "Do you sell any comic books?" Moll recalled. When she told him no, the man meandered around the store, then came behind the counter. As Moll backed away towards her purse, the man said she needed to have her open up the cash register. When he repeated the demand, Moll responded, "No, and I have a really good reason not to open my register. You want to see why?" She then pulled out the handgun, and said, "Why don't you try robbing somebody who doesn't have a gun?" At that, the man apologized and quickly fled. Moll called police, and the suspect was in custody within the hour. Now, here's my commentary. Number one, Aaron Moll was observant. She was aware. She sensed something wasn't right. Number two, she knew the need to back away and get her weapon. She was reasoning it out and not panicking. Three, she gave the robber excellent sarcastic information. Go rob someone without a gun. So what does that really mean, ladies and gentlemen? Without a weapon, you're defenseless. Do you really want to be in a defenseless situation? Most anti-gunners naively want you to be defenseless. Their logic is illogical. Defend yourself. All right, that's story number one. Number two. Three men armed with guns and knives rushed the cash register at a Boston liquor store just before closing one night. During the melee, one clerk's hand was cut and another was shot in the arm. Then in a moment's distraction, a third clerk, armed with a handgun, turned the tide, shooting all three suspects and sending them fleeing. Two of the suspects were picked up on the street amid a pool of blood and cash. The third was found in a hallway of a nearby building with a gunshot wound to his arm. Cool. My commentary, number one, I guarantee you this. Had the store owner put up a stupid sign restricting guns, the bad guys wouldn't listen and the good guys would be defenseless. Number two, because no stupid sign was put up, the third employee saved the day. Who do you thank more, the store clerk or the store owner? I say thank them both. Thanks the store owner for not putting people in a harm's way, and thank the store clerk for knowing and having and possessing and knowing how to use his handgun. Okay, story number three. A gun shop employee in Alabama, California. This is interesting for obvious reasons. I have a gun shop. A gun shop employee in Alhambra, California, shot and killed one of four men when they attempted to rob the store. The employee was working in the office of the Euro Arms gun store on one Friday morning when he heard a commotion, said Sheriff's Deputy Roberta Grenek. When he exited the office, one of the robbers confronted him and the employee shot him with a semi-automatic rifle. The wounded man's cohorts fled the store, but police later apprehended the two men. My comments. Number one, are you stupid? Robbing a gun shop while people are in it? Really? You didn't think that one out, did you? Number two, try doing that at my gun shop. You may make it in, but you definitely won't be leaving. So be advised. Robbing a gun shop with people in it, not too swift. All right, ladies and gentlemen, what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a break, about a minute or so. And when we come back, we're going to be going over the PEP section. Preparedness eliminates panic. Probably also practice eliminates panic too. But today I think it's going to be more on the preparation side. So, Paul, we're going to take a break. We'll come back in about a minute or so and we'll go over that section.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. aaronsgunshop.com.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. I'm Matt, your host, and we still have a lot to go in the show. But before we go any further, I wanted to make an announcement here. Your support of this radio show is greatly appreciated, and there's many ways to support this show. A monetary donation is always welcome. Becoming a sponsor is another great way. I'm sure there's lots of people out there with great products and services that would work well with what we're doing here. Becoming a sponsor just helps out tremendously. It's a micro business within a business. It helps support the show and it gets your word out there. Liking us on Facebook has spread the word about the show as well. And here's another thing. We have a small milestone. We're going to try and hit 400. We're about 10 away. So if you're listening right now and you have access, go ahead and like us on Facebook. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Like us. Let's break that 400 mark. Let's blow right past it, okay? Showing up to our events is really cool, too, because it gives us moral support. Calling into the show adds your input and opens topics up that we may not have been discussed before. So if you like the show and would like it to continue and grow, your support is greatly appreciated. The Aaron's High Cap Adventure Show is not just another talking head show. This show gives out information that you can apply just about immediately, almost immediately, for your self-well-being. So go to aaronsgunshop.com and check out the entire site. Look at the pictures, read the testimonials, listen to the past shows via the podcast, and together we can make a difference. If you have any positive suggestions, please let us know. With your help, we can complete the show by growing into a full 2 hours, which I'd like to do. Okay, Everybody, now, I'm always talking about being prepared. And I've talked to you before about the bug-out body, how wherever you go, you should have certain basic equipment on you. The bug-out bag, the basic one-day pack or three-day pack. The bug-out location, if it all goes to hell, where are you going to go? And then the bug-out vehicle, how are you going to get to that location? So what we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about the bug-out vehicle. Now, I got this information from the website. I scanned through a bunch of things, and I look, hey, this guy's got it going on, and he's got it all put together, so I'm just going to read from this. This was posted by Robert Richardson, Outdoor Tips. I'm just going to read from the article. From preparing for everyday vehicle problems and breakdowns to preparing your vehicle for quick evacuations during times of crisis, vehicle-related preparedness is an important topic that you can't afford to ignore. When seconds count, your bug-out vehicle needs to be ready and able to go and at moment's notice. So, turning your vehicle into a bug-out ready vehicle. While you could go out and buy a dedicated bug-out vehicle, for the purposes of this article, we're primarily focused on preparing your everyday driver, which makes so much sense. Okay, you're in your normal car all the time. It's got to be ready to go. Yes, a dedicated four-wheel drive bug-out vehicle would be nice, and if you have the money, then by all means, go ahead and invest in one. But the fact is, disasters rarely happen when you're expecting them. Unless your bug-out vehicle is your everyday driver, you need to prep all of your vehicles as if they were the one that's going to be used when a disaster strikes. So you have regular preventive maintenance. The first thing you need to focus on is your vehicle's ability to make it out during a disaster, which means you need to stay on top of your vehicle's regular maintenance. You got daily checks. Before getting in your vehicle in the morning, it's a good idea to do a quick walk around, look at the tires, check for leaks, and look for anything that looks out of the ordinary. Monthly checks. At least once a month, you should be checking things like your oil, transmission fluid, tire pressure, and other vehicle fluids. Never let your gas tank fall below half a tank. Now, I'm almost 53 years old, and I remember my dad in the 70s when they're having the major oil problems. He would never let the vehicle get under half a tank, so he started it all with me. When disaster hits, you need to be able to evacuate as quickly as possible. The last thing you want to do is get stuck in a long line at the gas station, so ideally, your gas tank should never fall below half of a tank. Stock up on the essentials. At the very least, you should be carrying either a dedicated bug-out bag or get-home-style bag in your vehicle at all times. Because your vehicle gives you the ability to carry even more than you would normally be able to fit into one of these bags, there are some vehicle-specific things that you might want to consider as well. Water. The average person goes through about a gallon of water per day. Water should be one of the first things you stockpile inside your vehicle. And I advise carrying a couple of these heavy-duty Aquatainer 7-gallon containers in your trunk. Article continues. Food. Quick and ready-to-eat foods like pop-top canned goods. Ladies and gentlemen, think about that. I'm always getting pop-up type of cans as compared to the ones you need a can opener for obvious reasons. When I'm in an emergency situation, the last thing I want to do is try to find something to poke a hole in the can and open it up so I can get the food out of it. Pop-up lids are very, very handy to have. Granola bars, high-calorie energy bars, are all things that can sustain you during an evacuation. Throw in some sugar packets, a couple bags of nuts, and some hard candy, and you have yourself a great source of instant energy, a good way to improve your mood. First aid kit. Your vehicle should have a good, dedicated first aid kit filled with the essentials for treating minor injuries, burns, and wounds. This is all basic stuff, everybody. Invest in a good emergency road kit. On top of your regular emergency gear bags, you should have a vehicle-specific preparedness kit. This kit should be filled with all the tools you need for roadside emergencies and vehicle breakdowns. Some vehicle-specific items that you may want to consider include a floor jack, jumper cables, or an emergency car battery jump starter. We just got those for all of our vehicles. It's pretty compact. It's nice. Check those out. This guy is saying he likes the Stanley J5C09 1000 peak amp jump starter because it's not only jump starts your battery, but it also has a compressor to fill flats and ports for charging cell phones, communication gear, laptops and tablets. Spare fuses, extra oil, antifreeze, and vehicle fluids. Spare hoses and fan belts, tire pumps, patches, and a can of Fix-A-Flat. A power inverter. Need one of those too. That comes in real handy. A properly inflated spare tire, preferably a full-size tire, not the donut types. jerry cans, jerry gas cans with extra fuel on the outside of your vehicle, of course. I carry one of these collapsible cardboard waxed gas cans that if I need to, instead of me carrying this big thing in the back of my trunk, it collapses into like a folder size gas can. And when I need it, I pop it open, go to the nearest place to fill it up with gas, and I can fill my car up with gas. A shovel and a piece of carpet or traction material. Combined with a floor jack, these can be used to get you out of snow, sand, and mud. Fire extinguisher. A good tow cable. A tow cable is a good idea for being a good Samaritan or in case you need someone to be one for you. Having a tow cable is important to have. Then we talk about emergency navigational gear and maps. In today's world of electronic gadgets and mapping apps, navigation is something that most people don't have to think about on a daily basis. But when it comes to emergency preparedness planning, the subject of navigation is definitely something that needs to be taken into consideration. Make sure you have maps of your local area, maps of your evacuation routes, and a good nationwide road atlas in your vehicle. I cannot stress to you how important that is. I used to teach land navigation to combat troops, thousands of them, out in the desert. And if your GPS goes down, map, compass, and protractor saves the day. Communication and signaling gear. During most disasters, there's a very high likelihood that most communication channels will go down. Hopefully, this will only be temporary. But either way, you need to plan for the worst-case scenario and have multiple ways to communicate available in your vehicle. They've got cell phones and car chargers. While this is the first thing that will probably go down, you should always have a fully charged phone and an extra car charger at all times. Satellite phones. If you can afford one, sat phones don't rely on local cell networks, so they're less likely to be affected by an increase in call volume or network outages. CB radios. We've all used those, right? A CB radio is a great way to communicate if you're traveling with a group of vehicles. They're also great for local communication and finding out local road condition from truckers driving in the area. And then we have the ham radio. When everything else goes down, a good multi-band ham radio will allow you to hear broadcast and communicate with people locally and around the world. So that was a pretty good article, basically giving you somewhat of a good idea of how to prep your vehicle. And then I was reading in the comments just to see what anybody else would say, and a couple of the comments read like this. It says, never forget the duct tape. Remember last time we talked about duct tape? Duct tape, baling wire, and JB Weld, or Quicksilver 2 part machinable epoxy. The epoxy has saved my rear end more than once when I have had an issue in the middle of nowhere. So those are pretty good things to have too. Duct tape, baling wire, and JB Weld. Also, another comment. Since most vehicles these days use serpentine belts, it's always a good idea to have a spare. Just hang on to the old one when putting the new one on, and you're set. And obviously, the wrench needed to move the tension bar is a must as well. And if you don't know what those are, ask your mechanic to tell you and get yourself another serpentine belt for your vehicle. This is pretty cool. In case you have a water shortage, I was wondering why no one ever puts outside spigot handles on their list. Most buildings have outside spigots, but many people remove the handles. It seems if you had a handle, you could obtain water without leaving any traces you might use with a pair of pliers. Now, I know that sounds kind of sneaky, but when you're desperate and the local Dollar General's closed, I'm not going to be breaking in the door, but I might have to get a drink or something. I got a little wrench and I can get a quick drink of water. Anyway, that was my thoughts on that. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, so there it is, the bug out vehicle. Little tricks of the trade here. And the last comment I saw, which is a no-brainer, also, consider always having a firearm in your vehicle. That's a duh. No-brainer. You should have the weapon with you all the time. All right. We're about the bottom of the hour here. I think we're going to take another quick break, and we'll come back on the other side, and we'll be going over some more of our great show here, Topic of Interest. I'm going to be talking to you about what's more dangerous, a gun or a knife. So that should prove interesting.
What you do in training, you will do in real life. If you fail to train, you have trained to fail.
Aaron's Gun Shop and 25-yard indoor range is proud to present High Cap Adventures Concealed Carry Academy. Realistic training to prepare you for real-life events. Advanced shooting techniques, drawing from concealment, clearing malfunctions.
If you plan to carry a concealed handgun for self-defense, you must be proficient in these skills, period.
Also learn how to read body language and be aware of your surroundings.
Understand speed versus accuracy.
Call Aaron's Gun Shop now to enroll in one of their classes or to get more information. Call 254-697-4721 or toll free 888-2-BE-FREE or check them out on the web at aaronsgunshop.com.
Remember, in a life or death situation, failure is not an option.
Train for success. Call Aaron's Gun Shop now, 254-697-4721 or 888-2-BE-FREE. That's 888-2-BE-FREE.
Welcome back to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Today is January 23rd, 2016. If you want to make or become part of the show, give us a call here at 254-773-1400. It's 254-773-1400. We'll get you on the phone, answer some questions, hear your comments. All nice ones, though. No bad comments. But I'll tell you what, everybody, if you're looking for advanced specialized training that when it comes to using a firearm, if so, you need to go to aaronsgunshop.com, the High Cap Adventure page. On that page is where we have listed our special training seminars. And those seminars include home and self-defense training seminar, ladies only home and self-defense training seminar. And I always make this comment, ladies, when you get together in this class, you let your hair down and you just have a good time because the guy is home at home. They're not critiquing you. You can really learn a lot of stuff in that class. Combat shotgun training, M4 close quarters combat training seminar, semi-auto rifle training seminar, and our PEP program seminars. So go to the High Cap Adventures page and read what each seminar offers. These seminars are geared for the homeowner or regular Joe or Jane on the street. These seminars are not designed for the combat operator or spec ops operators, okay? So if you wish to be sharpening your skills, give us a call. Groups of five or more can arrange for private classes. So the Aaron's Gun Shop, just go to aaronsgunshop.com, the High Cap Adventures page, and sign up now or give us a call for some more information. Now with that, I'm going to move into our topic of interest. We have this discussion a lot. What's more dangerous, a gun or a knife? Well, I've got another article here that I looked at, and the reason I pulled this article is because I like what he says. I concur with what he says, and we're going to read it, and then we're going to talk about it, and we also teach it in our classes. So here's what we got. This is from Jeff Anderson. He writes on the headline here, firearms experts joke, quote, never bring a knife to a gunfight, close quote. Here are five reasons they were wrong. Why do you own a gun? The obvious answer is to protect yourself and those you love from an attacker who poses a lethal threat, right? But are you training the right way for the threat you most likely to face? Reports of real close quarters attacks reveal that when it comes to facing an armed attacker intent on taking your life, you're in a much more danger from a knife attack than from someone armed with a gun. Don't believe me? Here are five reasons a knife can be more dangerous than a gun, he writes. Number one, knives are deadlier. Yes, you read that right. According to the FBI fatality stats from officers killed in a fight, 10% of those who were shot died from their wounds. But 30% of those who were attacked with a knife were killed as a result of being cut and stabbed. Number two, knives don't have a line of fire. A gun can only kill you if you're in the direct line of the bullet, or the path of the bullet. That also explains why, even in ranges as close to 3 to 6 feet, only about 1 in 4 bullets actually hit the target. And these stats are from trained police officers. But knives can do lethal damage from any angle, and they don't miss their target. Number three, knives don't run out of ammo. In close quarters attack, you could be stabbed 3 to 5 times in a single second. A handgun is only to give you about 15 rounds or so on the high end. Unless you're behind cover or at a distance far enough to give you some time to reload, that's all you're going to get is about those 15 rounds. And FBI stats also reveal that only 1 in 4 bullets ever hit their mark, even at ranges as close as 3 feet. Considering that it may take several rounds to finally stop an attacker, you may find a clip empty and still facing an enraged thug with a knife that's not running out of metal. Number four, knives take no skill to use. Since we were young, holding and cutting with a knife has been built into our natural abilities. While it takes lots and lots of training to become an expert with a firearm, any scumbag with a pointy piece of metal can wield a blade like a master with even the crudest of movements. Consider also that most gun owners who go to the range are practicing target shooting and aren't prepared for how to shoot in real close quarters gunfight. Number five, knives give little warning. Not only can knives be concealed and drawn easier than a firearm, but they're silent killers. When a gun is fired, you know you're in a gunfight. However, many victims in a knife attack claim they didn't even know they were being stabbed until it was too late. When under the influence of the adrenaline rush of a real attack, you may in fact not feel yourself being cut and mistake it for simply being punched. He continues, are you training the right way for the right attack? Now, the purpose of this article isn't to convince you to give up old Betsy for a pocket knife as your main defense weapon. I'll stick with my trusty Glock 19 at my side any day. But do you really think some scumbag with a knife is going to whip out his blade from 15 yards away and give you time to draw your weapon and get your sights on his center mass before he's charging your way? Heck no. A desperate criminal is going to already be right up in your face, where he knows he can cut you, before you even know your life is in danger. That doesn't give you a whole lot of room or time to draw your weapon, especially when it's already concealed and your heart's racing. Yet 95% of the guys I see down at the range still expend all their rounds trying to get super tight shot groups from 15 to 50 feet away. Real gunfights actually take place less than 9 feet away. And you know it's true. So don't find out the hard way that you were training all wrong for the wrong threat. Train for close quarter gunfights rather than target practice, and you'll greatly increase your chances of saving your life or the life of someone you love if you're ever attacked. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I like the article because it hits on a lot of points that I talk about. I may expand more on some points, and I'll give you an example. In our class, the question comes up, what's more dangerous, a gun or a knife? And I say, well, it depends. You know, there's many different ways to look at this. Here's an example. A gun fires a projectile, and it goes into you, and if it doesn't hit a vital, there's a chance that you're going to be in pain and you're going to bleed, but it may not incapacitate you. It's a hole, and it causes a shockwave in you. But if it doesn't hit an artery or anything like that, you could potentially keep going. A knife, on the other hand, if you slice the knife in an artery, on a leg, under the arm, jugular, I think you bleed out in about 20-something seconds, 20, 30 seconds, or if you don't bleed out all the way, you pass out in that amount of time. And I've seen videos where these guys come up, they'll come down low on your legs, slice both inner thighs, come up, stab you a couple times, cut you under the arm, and maybe even get your neck. It's incredibly fast if somebody knows what they're doing with a knife and what it can do to you. Another aspect of what we show in the class is this. I have a stretch in my classroom that's about 24 feet long. And I'll be standing at the door, and I'll have somebody at the far end of the classroom with a knife, a rubber knife, and the students in the class will say, go. Now, I know when the guy's going to attack me. He's there 24 feet away from me. When the class says go, I know he's going to be charging at me. I've got the gun concealed. We were teaching classes like this when it was concealed carry. Now we'll be doing it open as well. But at 24 feet, by the time I get the gun out and feel comfortable with the shot, he's probably about 3 or 4 feet away from me. He's running. He's charging. He's coming after me. I see it. I figure out what's going on. I clear the clothing, acquire the grip, pull the gun out, and take the shot, and he's probably right around 3 or 4 feet. His momentum is going. The knife is out. He's about to attack me. So if the first shot doesn't incapacitate him immediately, he's going to be on my person before you know it. So when people say, well, knives, if they're far enough away, it's no big deal. A person can be on you very, very quickly with a knife. And that's when you know he's coming. Another example I say, just to give you an idea here, is let's say you're at the mall and you just took out your wallet to buy something, and the bad guy's in the shadows watching, trying to find his mark, and he sees you just made a big transaction, a lot of money was passed back and forth, and you got this big freaking wallet in your back pocket, and he's watching you, and then he sees you going in the middle of the mall in the aisle there where all the kiosks are, and you're bending over looking at something, and he says, this is my time. He's not paying attention. He comes up, knife comes out, he sticks you in the kidney, he takes your wallet out, and you've got this burning sensation in your kidney. Then you got this wet sensation because the blood is trickling down your body and you're collapsing on the floor not knowing what just happened. So it can come out of nowhere from anybody at any angle, And the other thing in this article that I can't back up enough is this. I say this all the time. When you're shooting your gun at the range at a piece of paper, you know what that's telling me? It tells me that your gun works at a range and it hits a piece of paper. Because I guarantee you, when the stress is on, the adrenaline's pumping, and you have to pull that gun out for self-defense, it's not going to respond the same way as when you're shooting at a piece of paper. That is why I train the way I train, and I train my students the way I train them. We have a thing called a round robin. You'll give me one of the best target shooters out there. They can handle the gun well in the sense of loading it, aiming it, taking the respiratory pause, putting their finger on the trigger, taking the slack out of the trigger, and putting bullet hole inside a bullet hole inside a bullet hole, because they've trained with this gun over and over and over again. It's got all the bells and whistles. It's one of those high-speed, low-drag type of target pistols. But now, you put them in a real situation, and you say, hey, here's five different guns. You got to pick them up, load them, and get them in operation under a certain amount of time and hit with accuracy. They start spitting up on themselves. They don't know what to do. They can't handle the gun because they're not familiar with it. They start cutting themselves on the slide because they're trying to find the slide release and they can't. Because they're so hyped up, their grip isn't right. Sometimes the slide bashes their thumb. Their shot groups are wide open. And by the time it's all said and done, they would have been dead. So keep on training like you're training at the range where you're shooting a gun at a piece of paper and it's not going to do you much when it's live. So come take some training from me. Aaron'sGunShop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventure page. I've still got some slots available for February 13th. I actually had a couple had to cancel, so I've got two more slots that came open. If you want to take advantage of the home defense or home invasion self-defense seminar on February 13th, you need to go to Aaron'sGunShop.com, go to the High Cap Adventure page and sign up for that class, and it'll have all the information there that you need. So that's that on the topic of interest. What's more dangerous, a gun or a knife? I don't know. I guess it all depends on who's got the knife and who's got the gun. Be aware of your surroundings. Remember the three A's. Acknowledge as a threat. Be aware of your surroundings. Avoid it if at all possible. If it's not possible, then defend yourself to the best means available. And if it's with your handgun, make sure it's true. If it's with a knife, good luck. I don't want to fight with a knife. That's too close for me, but I'll do it if I have to. All right. If you have any questions, give us a call here at the KTEM Studios, 254-773-1400, or give us a shot on an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com. We're right on track with the show, so we're going to take another break here. And when we come back, we're going to be going over our product demo with Blackjack Firearms. So we'll see you on the other side.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunShop.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Remember, if you want to become part of the show today, call here at the studios, 254-773-1400, or you can give us an email at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com or just go to the website, aaronsgunshop.com. Ladies and gentlemen, lots of people wonder or doubt their ability to function well in a seminar or a training session. That's not the problem. The problem is finding an instructor who knows what they're doing and who is able to convey those skills to his or her students. If you have any doubts about yourself, I want you to refer to aaronsgunshop.com and go to the testimonial page. You'll get to watch, listen, and read testimonials from prior students who have come from all over the state. Now, they stated that they came in nervous, and at the end of the day, they craved more training and info. They all broke through the barrier of self-doubt and became empowered with the knowledge that they can use their weapon and function under stress. If you've ever wanted to take a weapons class but were too unsure to commit, I challenge you to review the testimonial page at aaronsgunshop.com. You can do this. You can do these courses. Don't be timid. Don't be afraid. Don't be shy. Once you get there, you'll break right through it. So go to aaronsgunshop.com, watch the videos, and read the testimonials. Okay, I want to move on to our product spotlight. As you know, Blackjack Firearms, John and Steve, good friends of mine, they live right across the road. I mean, how much better can you get than that? They build guns, they're friends, and they live across the road, and I get to put my hands on a whole bunch of their guns and accessories. Right then and there, I can say, ooh, this is nice. So we were talking, and when we were talking about the differences between a piston bolt, or a difference between a gas piston and a direct impingement type of bolt carrier group. And so they can give you either one. You can call up Blackjack Firearms or go to bjfirearms.biz. Check out their website and they'll show you all the different things that they have available there and you can call them up. But if you're debating as to whether or not you want to go piston or direct impingement, you can talk to them about it and they can give you whatever you want. But I wanted to read an article. We were talking about this and I looked it up to get the terminology down and the layout down, and we found a couple articles here. So I'm just going to read a couple quick articles that goes over the difference between the gas piston and direct impingement technology for your AR-15. And if you decide that you like one over the other, give John and Steve a call at Blackjack Firearms and they can help you out. But here we go. The AR-15, while eminently customizable, carries with it a few conundrums. And this is from Stag Arms. One is the choice of operating system. Do you get a model which uses gas piston technology or the more traditional direct impingement? Fans of the gas piston will state that the impingement models are more prone to jamming and often foul easily. Fans of the impingement model will call gas piston technology mechanically unsound. So who is correct, and what is the real difference between the model types here? Basic AR functionality. What makes an AR-15 an AR-15? To qualify as an AR-15, a rifle must be self-loading and be able to perform a specific set of basic functions mechanically without user assistance. To be more specific, when depressing the trigger, the rifle needs to fire a single cartridge and then extract that spent case from the chamber and eject it in some manner. Next, it must then load an unspent cartridge into the chamber. The round is plucked from the magazine, the breech is then locked, the hammer is cocked, the rifle will then have a fresh round loaded and again be ready to fire. Direct impingement. How do the original AR-15 models work? Direct impingement is the original technology devised by Eugene Stoner. Propellant gas is bled through a small hole located in the barrel, which is then channeled through a very small tube where it can proceed directly contact or impinge the bolt carrier mechanism. At this point, the gas is pushed to the rear of the rifle and the spent case is extracted and ejected. It is then pushed forward by a spring, loaded action, and strips an unspent round from the cartridge, loading it directly into the chamber of the barrel. Contrary to statements of gas piston proponents, we have put over 2,000 rounds through rifles without cleaning and without malfunction. All right, so that was direct impingement. Let's talk about the gas piston technology. How do the new piston technologies work? Gas piston technology was first used in modern firearms by Mikhail Kalashnikov on the AK-47. While similar to direct impingement systems, there are a few key differences in operation. The firing process begins with the propellant gases being bled into the barrel. However, instead of it being forced into tubes as is the direct impingement system, it is contained in a separate cylinder. The cylinder contains a piston, similar in operation to what you may find in an AK-47. The gas moves the piston, is in turn pushes the bolt carrier rearward to the handle, then the extraction and ejection processes, and then is moved pushed forward to the closed position by spring, just as with a direct impingement. So which system is better? The direct impingement has proven itself through the years on the AR-15 platform, and replacement parts are inexpensive, easy to obtain, and generally made to set mil-spec standard. Due to hot gas fired from the cartridge being redirected into the action, it will quickly heat up and become dirty, requiring a cool-down period before the bolt carrier can be removed from the rifle. The action of a piston rifle remains cool and clean, even after shooting 100 rounds in rapid succession. The bolt carrier can be removed immediately and held in your hand without burning yourself. The trade-off for the action staying cool and clean is that you will experience snappier recoil when shooting, which makes the piston rifle a little less accurate, especially for follow-up shots. Finally, piston system parts are not interchangeable between manufacturers due to there being no set standard on the use of proprietary pistons for bolt carriers. All right, so there you have your basic gas piston and direct impingement systems. On this other article, I wanted to read to you six facts about the AR-15 gas impingement versus piston. So now that we've read the basics, let's go over another article here and see what they have to say about it. And this one here was posted by Guns and Gear by Richard A. Mann. As someone who tests and reviews guns for a variety of firearm periodicals, I've had the opportunity to test versions of both the gas impingement and piston-driven ARs. And here are my factual discoveries. One, piston-driven guns run much cleaner. Fire a 30-round magazine through a piston-driven AR and it will look just as clean afterwards as it did before you fired it. Two, piston-driven guns run much cooler. You'll have to shoot about 100 rounds through a piston gun and a gas gun to really feel the difference, but it's there. Three, on average, pistol-driven guns are less accurate. This does not mean pistol-driven ARs are inaccurate, but looking over my test records, the most accurate ARs I've tested have been those that work with the gas impingement system. Number four, on average, piston-driven guns cost more. This observation must be qualified with "it depends." There are some very expensive gas impingement ARs and some piston-driven ARs that are not all that expensive. However, if you want to purchase the least expensive AR possible, it will be a gas impingement gun. With the gas piston system, gas is funneled from the barrel to drive a piston that works the action. While the gas impingement system, gas is diverted from the barrel through a tube and back to the upper receiver to operate the action. Number five, if you intend to run a suppressor on your AR, it has been my experience that gas impingement guns run more suppressor friendly, especially those with an adjustable gas block that allows you to control the amount of gas directed back through the gas tube. And number six, both piston-driven and gas impingement guns are very reliable. If by magic you had inserted me into the pages of Bryce Tulsi's book, The 14th Reinstated, and I had to live through a social economic collapse where there were roving bands of marauders, and if you told me that I had to pick between a gas impingement or a piston-driven AR, I really would not care which one I ended up with, except for three things. Parts for gas impingement ARs are easy to find, much more plentiful, and less expensive. Now, here's the good news. The unmatched modularity of the AR allows you, in a way, to have your cake and eat it too. If you own a gas impingement AR and want to try a piston-driven AR, just purchase the piston-driven upper receiver, since the gas impingement and piston system works independently of the lower receiver. You can alternate between both on the same lower receiver. So, ladies and gentlemen, there in a 5-minute segment, John, Steve, and I are talking at Blackjack Firearms. We're talking about the pros and cons of the piston and the direct impingement. Now that you've heard it, the basics of it, you can go research it yourself. But definitely go to Blackjack Firearms, bjfirearms.biz, and check out all they have to offer. And they can give you a better idea, better details between the piston and the direct impingement. So check them out at bjfirearms.biz. They've got a lot to offer. They've done so many things for me, and I love them all. So with that, check them out, bjfirearms.biz. Okay, I wanted to do this last week, but I didn't have time. And this is the gun training demo. And this is so important. It's about keeping your eyes on the threat. And to do that, you must know yourself. And you must know your weapon. And you must know your weapons in general. Just general weapons. You got to know their basic functionality. You must know where the threat is at all times, if possible, because you're going to shoot and move faster if you do. Now, I made all these notes here. In the classes that we teach at Aaron's Gun Shop, we go over all this in depth. But right here in a 5-minute spot, I'm just going to give you a few bits and pieces. Keeping your eyes on the threat. First of all, who is assaulting you? And where are they? Where are they in relationship to you? And don't lose track of where they go. And do all repairs on your firearm if necessary while monitoring the threat. Now, we call this being aware, and we call this pot. I talk about this all the time. I ask my students all the time, do you guys like pot? Perception of threat. What's the perception of threat? What's going on? Be aware of your surroundings. What's happening at the moment? Who's assaulting you? Where they're at? Where's your relationship in as to where you are, as to where they are? And don't lose track of them at all possible. Now, you must know yourself. What are you on a scale from 1 to 10? I ask my students this all the time. If you're a 10, that means you're packing heat all the time. If you're a 1, you rarely do it. My problem is, if your attitude is a 10, does your physical ability to run the gun match your attitude to carry the gun? If your ability to run the gun is only a 2, 3, or 4, but your mental attitude is a 10, and you're carrying the gun with an attitude of a 10, you're going to have a problem. Are you cool under fire? People freak out. You never know when you're going to freak out. You can have the most combat-ready individual, person who's seen it all, and all of a sudden something makes them snap and they just freeze. You never know. But we try to minimize that by training our minds, training our body, making sure we understand what's going on. Knowing how to use a gun at the range or under simulated condition is not the same as the real thing. Now, simulated helps, but going to the range and shooting at paper, that's a joke when it comes to training for simulated or real situations. You've got to max out. You've got to push yourself to the best of your ability. And once again, that's what our seminars do. You must know your weapon. Can you draw it quickly from your holster? Can you get the right grip every time to ensure an accurate shot? Can you shoot with one hand, two hands, or your weak hand? Can you do all of what I just said using somebody else's gun? That's why it's so important that you must know weapons in general. Shooting your own gun over and over at a piece of paper is fine if you like to spend money and ammo. But what happens when your gun breaks down? It's taken away, or you just don't have access to your gun. Can you shoot a different gun at the moment? Can you make it function? Can you shoot it accurately? Are you stressing out because you haven't taken this gun out to the range and shot at paper targets in a safe, controlled environment? So what I'm getting at is this. You have to have an awareness of yourself, an understanding of what you can do, so that when you have a malfunction with your firearm, if you're in a shoot for some reason, and he shoots at you and misses, or he just wings you or something, and you take a shot and your gun has a malfunction, can you clear the malfunction all the while maintaining focus on the threat? I'll do scenarios in the classroom, and I'll say, here's the situation, stovepipe, what are you going to do? And they start thinking about it and talking about it and doing this and doing that, and they just totally forgot about the threat. So what you have to do is master yourself, master your weapon. So when the gun goes down, you stay focused on the threat, and without actually looking at your firearm, you can manipulate your handgun, clear the weapon, and get it back loaded and on target. So you can take the next shot if necessary without losing where the threat is. If we lose the threat, then we're susceptible to an attack from an unknown direction. We have to maintain focus on the threat at all times if possible. I know sometimes it can get out of your view, but do your best, the best of your ability to maintain focus on the threat and to manipulate your firearm without really looking at your firearm. That takes practice. Sign up for one of our classes. Go to aaronsgunshop.com. Go to the High Cap Adventures page. Check out what we have to offer and sign up. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We're going to take our top of the hour break. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to speak here with our special guest, Cameron Police Chief Randy Dixon. So, Paul, on this next break, we're going to be back in about a minute. And we will have on the studio here, Police Chief Randy Dixon.
What you do in training, you will do in real life. If you fail to train, you have trained to fail.
Aaron's Gun Shop and 25-Yard Indoor Range is proud to present High Cap Adventures Concealed Carry Academy. Realistic training to prepare you for real-life events. Advanced shooting techniques, drawing from concealment, clearing malfunctions.
If you plan to carry a concealed handgun for self-defense, you must be proficient in these skills, period.
Also learn how to read body language and be aware of your surroundings.
Understand speed versus accuracy.
Call Aaron's Gun Shop now to enroll in one of their classes or to get more information. Call 254-697-4700. Or toll free 888-2-BE-FREE or check them out on the web at aaronsgunshop.com.
Remember, in a life or death situation, failure is not an option.
Train for success. Call Aaron's Gun Shop now, 254-697-4721 or 888-2-BE-FREE. That's 888-2-BE-FREE.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio program. All right, everyone, if you don't have your CHL, which is really the license to carry, I have a bad habit, I keep calling it CHL. If you don't have your license to carry, you need to go to aaronsgunshop.com. And when you're there, go to the CHL page, which needs to be changed to the license to carry page. And there you will find upcoming classes that we offer. So sign yourself up to take a class with me so you can be on your road to getting your license. Why wait till it's too late to get your license? Defend yourself now. The course time is approximately 5 hours, and that includes your written and shooting test, and the fee for the course is $60. So trust me, you won't be bored. I've been teaching for a long time to many, many people, and I've got lots of tricks up my sleeves to help you do better and to learn more in a shorter period of time. So go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to the CHL page, and sign up for a new class now. And they're filling up quickly, so don't wait. I've got another class tomorrow, and that's Sunday, and that one's going to be at 2 o'clock. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I want to introduce to you now, great guy, Cameron Police Chief Randy Dixon. Chief, how you doing?
Doing great today.
Glad you're back on. We talked to you a little bit earlier in the show, but we had you on a ways back, and I read a whole bio on you. Ladies and gentlemen, this guy goes back a long ways. How many years, Chief, have you been on?
42 and a half now.
42 and a half, and you've gotten major awards, not awards, recognitions from President Reagan, right?
Clinton, actually.
Clinton, sorry.
Don't hold it against me.
You want to give us a couple of details of what you do?
Yeah. How
you're
doing? We had back in the 80s, 90s, we worked very active program at Temple PD with crime prevention, with children, with activities and drug resistance, and it was recognized by the president a couple of times.
So you got your stuff going on, and that's why I'm happy to have you in here and talk to you and have everybody listen to you, because you got a whole bunch of experience. Let me tell you one of the reasons why I asked you on it. I was reading an article, and it says burglaries prompt meeting. So ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to read this article a little bit just to give you an idea why we brought it in, but we're going to be talking about neighborhood watches. This goes about 20 North Temple residents concerned about home burglaries in their neighborhood met Sunday afternoon and decided to become part of the already existing Jackson Park Neighborhood Watch. Our biggest concern is that we lose the safety of our neighborhood, said Mary Nelson. We see it coming if we don't bond together as a community. Be aware and just not make it easy. She and her husband, Roy, who live on North Fifth Street, invited their neighbors to the meeting and a free barbecue. And Officer Bradley Perrin, a member of the Community-Oriented Policing Services with the Temple Police Department, and Corporal David Hess, a patrol officer, provided information and answered questions. Perrin got everybody's name and address and asked them to think about electing a block captain. So I want to talk about that too, Chief. It's kind of up to them how they want to do things, Perrin said. The whole idea is to make it where it's convenient for your neighborhood, and we talked about that in the pre-show. The city of Temple has 15 neighborhood watches and from 12 to 15 community groups that are not fully organized. We're having people contact us to get more started all over town. So I'll tell you what, let's stop there. Chief, I read that article and I'm saying to myself, you know, I used to have a neighborhood watch sign on my fence post. And that was about 20-something years ago. It fell off. But I'm my own neighborhood watch. I'm constantly looking. Why don't we talk about this now?
Sure.
And you had sent me some information. I don't really want to read off of this. I want to just hit on a couple points, and you just start talking about it. But the first question would be this. What's a neighborhood watch? Why is it important? Just give us a quick overview, and then we'll get into the details.
A neighborhood watch is a program that is it's a citizen's effort to protect their own neighborhood. You know, in any city, I don't care whether it's Temple, Cameron, or Killeen, you have to have police officers, obviously, to do the job of patrol, answer calls, etc. They can't be everywhere at one time. It takes another set of eyes. It takes people wanting to protect their own neighborhood that's interested in making sure their house is not a victim of a burglary, a theft, or whatever, to get together and organize in a reporting effort to make them safer. Now, just putting a sign up, and I'll be first to tell you, I know a lot of neighborhoods that have just put a sign up and thinks that's a neighborhood watch. That's not a neighborhood watch. That's a sign effort. A neighborhood watch is when you actually have your neighbors doing like we used to do here in Temple back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, where you watched each other's neighborhood. I grew up here in Temple back in the 50s, 60s, 70s, on North 27th Street here in town, and everybody knew each other. when someone was out of town, we went out of town. We didn't lock our doors, didn't have to. But you can't do that anymore.
Not anymore. Is it because society is so transient now?
Society has changed. It's transient. It's a me, I think, society more than anything else anymore, which back then it was a let's take care of our neighbor society. So a neighborhood watch group organizes neighbors' blocks, several blocks, where they meet, they elect a captain who is kind of the ramrodder of it. And I don't mean they're not the boss. All they do is a coordinator.
Would he be he or she be the one that initially came up with the concept?
Yes. Okay. They contact the police department for attainment a date and time when all the citizens can meet in somebody's home or out in a block or out in a yard. And the officer can come talk to them about what their responsibilities are. And more importantly, what the responsibilities are not in a neighborhood watch as well.
Why don't we talk about that right off at the get-go here? What are the responsibilities and what are not? Because I was going to ask, you've got protection of life and property, protection of a third person, so on and so forth.
Right.
So how does that fit into the mix here?
In one of the things that you have to look at is what does it take to make crime? You know, there is something that is known as the crime triangle. That's ability, opportunity, and desire. You can't control somebody's ability to do something, a criminal effort. You can't control their desire, but you can control a person's opportunity to commit a crime against you. And that's the purpose of Neighborhood Watch. We start off by securing our own house, our own property. We make sure that we've got lights up at nighttime. We put the right door locks on. We secure our windows. We mark our valuables. We photograph our valuables. We trim our shrubbery. We do that first. That is one of the main essence of Neighborhood Watch. An officer will tell people how to secure their homes. And then what the other part of that is, you look out, you see people that are in your neighborhood that doesn't belong. You write down license plate numbers. You write down a description of the person. And then you call your neighbor and check on your neighbor once in a while. You check to see if they're going to be out of town. Hopefully you get to know your neighbor well enough that they trust you, that if they're going out of town, they'll call and say, "Hey, Joe, I'm going out of town. Would you watch around my property for me?" Now, what it's not an armed vigilante group. I encourage everyone to have their license to carry. Protect your own property. Protect your livelihood. Protect yourself inside your home. But we don't want armed citizens going around and confronting everybody that walks up and down your block. That'd be the same as if we confronted everybody that we saw on open carry. It's not right. Consider that.
What you sent me here, there was three words that I highlighted. It says reporting suspicious activity. I bring that up because if we talk about C.J. Grisham again, if you look at it all, take all the weird stuff out of it and just say some woman called because she saw something strange, a guy with a rifle. First of all, it's because everybody had 10 different answers as to whether you could carry a rifle in the open. But when you say responding suspicious activity, how crazy can that become? Are these people going to be going, "Oh my gosh, I see somebody, I've never seen them before," and they're just walking through and it causes all sorts of craziness?
What we encourage people to do is, we live in a free society where it's not against the law to walk up down the street. It's not against the law to walk up down sidewalks that the town provides. But if they see someone that is staring at their property, is stopping and milling around, if they're not traveling through, if they're in a vehicle, going back to a vehicle, getting out of the vehicle, or if they see a vehicle sitting in their property with people in the car they've not seen before, that's suspicious in any way you look at it. And I would a whole lot rather a citizen call and report that to the police department and let the police department check it out than not do anything and then find out somebody's home was robbed or burglarized or their property was something stolen from their property, or even worse, somebody was injured or taken advantage of inside the home.
Chief, let me ask you something here. I think I know the answers. I'm just saying it for course the conversation here and maybe open up something I'm not aware of. Here you got this neighborhood watch and your neighbor requests that you check out the property, and all of a sudden you're on your property but you see something funny on their property, so you go over and do based on your agreement with the neighbor. Mm-hmm. And while you're there, you're seeing something weird, and the property, and within the rights of the law of what you can do to use force, reasonable necessary force or deadly force, you apply those. I mean, is that a total separate thing from Neighborhood Watch, or does somehow will that get pulled into the Neighborhood Watch attitude?
Actually, that's a separate issue altogether. What we would rather people do is report. call, if you see something, watch them and then call the police department and let them go over and do, that's what they get paid to do. That's, they get paid to go in to protect your property. I'm not saying people shouldn't confront them if it's imminent, but if you've got an opportunity where you can call and let the professionals who have the marked badge, who have the uniform on, it just makes it a lot easier for everybody involved.
I know where I live. I live out in the country, and we have lots of little communities out in the country. I mean, it's all one big community, but the way the terrain sets and you have houses that are further away from other houses, they all become their little communities.
Right.
And what's nice is we've got visual contact with each other. We got our cell phone numbers. We can text people. We can call up. We can look. Or if we had to, call up. So that's a really great thing, like you're saying, being know your neighbors. Whereas when you're in a city environment, wouldn't you agree that because you got rental properties, you have more people coming in and going out as compared to somebody who buys a piece of land, they got a ranch, they got a farm or something, they're pretty much there for a while.
Right. One of the things that I saw very interesting in my time in police work is, and it's in two different neighborhoods, there is the neighborhood watch captain, the block captain, actually had put together a list of who lived in what house, went door to door asking, tell them this is what it's for, it's not to, just for this, who is supposed to be here, do you have an emergency contact number, cell phone number, and if they see somebody walking around their house, they can call them and say, are you okay? Are you supposed to, somebody supposed to be there? And then that gives them an opportunity to be able to call somebody.
Yeah, that's a great concept. Get to know your friend, get to know your neighbors. That helps out a lot. Judge, Chief, on this form you sent me here, we're talking about, so what does it take to start and maintain an effective neighborhood watch? Go over that again. What would be the steps? You'd find the person and they call the police department,
right?
And you have, do you have somebody specific in like Cameron? For example?
In Cameron, we have different officers that are what we consider ourselves a community or policing, community policing project. So our entire department is geared towards safety. Now in Temple, for instance, they have a specific community policing department within its department that officers will come out and they'll present neighborhood watch programs. We used to call it the crime prevention unit. That's kind of waned over the years, and that acronym has gone away. The only thing that really has to take place to organize it is find one or two citizens that's fed up, someone who wants to make their quality of life, their neighborhood's quality of life better. So they go around and ask their neighbors, are you interested in doing this? If they get a favorable yes, then set a time and a date, a couple of them probably, and then call your local police department and ask them who handles the Neighborhood Watch Program. And almost every single department in the area does this.
Now, is this going to be different if a Neighborhood Watch personnel sees something and they're going to call law enforcement? They're going through the 911 or they're calling the officer in charge?
No, they call 911.
Okay.
They call for an immediate officer to come out.
And is there anything when they're doing the 911 call? I know 911 dispatchers and you have to be very specific. Is there anything that they should make up front known?
They need to tell what the situation is, what makes them believe that somebody is doing something that is something no good, what's suspicious.
Well, like I was reading that article here, it said they actually gave a name to it, the existing Jackson Park Neighborhood Watch. Does law enforcement have it listed as, hey, this is a group
that... Not usually.
Okay, so no. When a 911 call goes, it's just basic person who sees it is calling 911 and
right.
They take it from there.
Right.
And what I was trying to get at was if the department knows that there's a watch out there and that they know that this person's calling in from that watch, it may say, oh, okay, this guy knows who he's talking about. They've gone through the protocol of what things we should know and all that. I thought it might make it easier.
It absolutely would not hurt for them to say that. Absolutely. If someone calls our 911 system and they say that we're in a neighborhood watch group that's located on South 30th Street here in Temple, then absolutely tell the officers that. That way that gives a little bit of validity to the fact they're not just calling because they're just calling. But mainly, you know, when a person calls to report something, there's certain information that 911 call taker is going to need, and that's time, place, suspicious activity, what it looks like, license plate number, a color of car, if you can't get a license plate number, color of car, big car, small car, medium car, four-door, no lights, anything that you can help.
Why is it so hard, again, to keep a neighborhood watch going?
The hardest thing is people get ambivalent. People think, well, we really don't need it. You know, nothing's happening in our neighborhood.
That's a surefire sign that it's working.
It's working. That's exactly right. You know, my neighborhood is safe. We've not had anything happen here in 6 years extra. It's kind of like, what do we have insurance for? We carry insurance because of what could happen.
What could happen? Spare tire on your car.
Exactly. That's exactly the same reason you need to be prepared. Preparedness.
I can't talk about that enough, everybody. Preparedness. People keep saying, oh, you're just paranoid. No, paranoid is when you don't know. I know things are going to happen, so I want to be prepared for it. And that's part of what this show is all about. It's giving out information there that can help you get prepared in situations. And we're trying to go over as many different topics as we can in the course of this radio program, not just this show, but every show, so that you can glean off of it and maybe spark your creative ideas out there. Say, hey, you know, I'm a little weak in this area, a little weak in this one. I need work. Oh, that was great information. Never thought about that. So on and so forth. While I was reading this, Chief, I saw it said here, opportunity reduction and social problems. Can you explain on that, what those terms mean and what they're for?
Basically, social problems, we'll go with opportunity. Number one, we reduce the opportunity for something to happen to us. That's what Neighborhood Watch does. It teaches us to take care of ourselves first. You can go up and down neighborhoods and you can see garage doors raised up. You can see cars left unlocked. Last year in our city, we had X number of auto burglaries. All but two were unlocked vehicles. All but two for the whole year. You know, you've got to reduce the opportunity for that to happen. Social disorder. You know, if you take stock in your neighborhood and you act like you care about your neighborhood, you're going to take care of your neighborhood better. It's kind of like the broken windows theory. You know, if you have a neighborhood that's run down, that's got junk cars, that's got windows broke everywhere, that's got graffiti painted everywhere, it's like nobody cares.
Would you say that what you're talking about is like somebody standing with a command posture, and then when somebody sees them, they're going to say, that guy's got it going on, he's aware, he's got command presence?
Exactly.
As compared to somebody with their head down and becoming a potential victim.
Absolutely.
So having your local area, your neighborhood watch looking good, dressed right, dressed, looking good, standing tall, as compared to somebody who's run down, the criminal may say, oh, this is an easy mark, as compared to one that's not.
Right. And the good part about that is you can live in the most expensive part of this city, or you can live in the most economically blighted part of this city. But if you have pride in your neighborhood, that has nothing to do with it. You take care of your neighborhood. You get your neighbors to be proud of where they live, regardless of what the socioeconomic conditions are.
Chief, did we talk about alternatives to a traditional neighborhood watch?
Sure. We haven't, but there are some alternatives. Some of them was where, and this is one that I'm familiar with a little bit, and I believe Waco tried this for a while, and may still do this. They actually have people that sign up for shifts that will patrol their neighborhood, sit in a car that they have a magnetic sign that says Neighborhood Watch on the side.
Isn't that a disaster waiting to happen?
To me, it
Trayvon
is.
Trayvon Martin, isn't that a scenario like that?
Yes, sir. To me, it is.
And don't get me wrong. I think that's awesome that people want to get involved, but I know you can get too enthusiastic and cause a problem.
You can, and sometimes people get a little overzealous and overaggressive when they're trying to protect their neighborhoods. People still have the right to move in our country freely. And unfortunately, when you put somebody out on patrol, you give them a radio, you give them a car that says Neighborhood Watch Group, not everybody who comes in your neighborhood's a bad guy. You've got to watch. Matter of fact, no contact is a better thing. So the less you contact people, the more you let law enforcement contact them, the safer the community is.
One of the main things I teach, ladies and gentlemen, or one of my main concept ideas when I'm teaching, is that you never have to pull your gun in the first place. And that's with being aware of your surroundings, acknowledging a threat, and avoiding it if at all possible. So with this neighborhood watch deal, too, be observant. Take all these tips of having pride in your neighborhood, knowing your neighbors, getting the numbers down, so on and so forth. Be aware. Have a good relationship with law enforcement. Get to know some of the officers directly. Go say hi to your police chief. Let them get to know you. I mean, it works out a lot when you get to know people on a personal basis. They know you're for real. They know you're trustworthy. They kind of listen to information that you're giving because you have accountability. And so that helps out a lot. If you're fly by night, you know, and not making sense, sometimes like I do on this radio show. But if you're like that, they're probably not going to listen to you as much. So make sure you got your I's dotted and your T's crossed. Was there anything else on the alternatives?
That's the main alternative to neighborhood watch.
Well, then I'll tell you what, Chief. We've only got about a minute or so left for this segment before I got to move on. Do you want to recap this? Do you want to talk about anything? You got 45 seconds here for the mic to tell us what you got and what we could possibly do to...
The main thing I'd like the listeners to understand is that the police department is there to help them. It's not just to write tickets, work wrecks. We want to be proactive in not having something happen. So we encourage citizens to pick up the telephone, call our police department, call whatever police department you're in, and say, what can you do to help my neighborhood and make it safer? What can you do to make my house safer? We'll send an officer out, we'll let them look at it, and they'll do a survey on your own home if you request it.
Well, that's good to know. That's good to know. So is there a department for that?
There usually it's handed up through your community policing department.
That's fantastic.
And there's no charge.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've had Cameron Police Chief Randy Dixon on here for the last 20 minutes, and he's been going over Neighborhood Watch, lots of good ideas. Chief, if they can't call their local police chief, can they call you?
Oh, absolutely. I've had people from every walk that I used to work or where I've worked call me. They're welcome to call 254-697-6574, and that's 254-697-6574. I had a blank there for a minute. And I'll answer any questions they can. I mean, I'd be happy to help them.
Here's another thing, too. When I talk to the chief, it's amazing. I'll ask a question, and you can see the computer banks working, and there's no notes needed. It's all in there. He's got this long history of law enforcement experience. He's got all this data that he can drop on you at any moment. So if you can, give him a call or go to your local police chief or your sheriff in your county, get a relationship going and get your neighborhood watches going, because if we eliminate the opportunities for the crime, we'll eliminate crime to some degree. So that'd be great. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was it with Chief Randy Dixon from Cameron. We're going to take a last minute break, and when we come back, we're going to finish up the show with possibly an interview here, not an interview, but we're going to talk over our Common Ground newsletter. I want to tell you what's going on with that. So we'll be back in just a minute.
Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures. If you've decided to carry a handgun for self-defense, you better know what you're doing. If you don't, you better learn fast. Not only fast, but thoroughly. Aaron's Gun Shop and High Cap Adventures fills the void between a Johnny wannabe and a person who has been properly trained in the proper handling and use of a firearm. Call me, Matt Bitros, at 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com and set up a class or seminar to get you started on the road to proficiency with a firearm for self-defense. Go to our website, aaronsgunshop.com, and review the High Cap Adventures page. We have seminars to cover most forms of firearms training. Call 254-697-4721 or email me at aaronsgunshop@gmail.com to get more information on how to get started with your training. The time for games is over. Reality starts now. AaronsGunshop.com.
Welcome back, everybody. Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program. Don't forget, we've got lots going on coming up in the next few weeks. So go ahead and check out AaronsGunshop.com. Check out the CHL page, the High Cap page. Go to... like us on Facebook, everybody. We're almost at 400. I believe we may have passed it. With your help, we can do that. But it's a nice little milestone that we can hit. But I want to tell you also about our Gallery of Guns page on my website, aaronsgunshop.com. You can go search for almost any gun you may have an interest in. When you're at the Gallery of Gun page, you can do a gun search, look at some of our special sales, take a peek at our new arrivals, and many other items as well. So when doing a gun search, just find the manufacturer you're interested in and click on it. Allow the information to load, then fill in the parameters of the gun you're looking for. Once the list comes up, you can click on each gun and see a picture and details about the gun that you've selected. And you can also do a pre-checkout to see how much taxes and shipping will be, so you know the exact price of the gun before it gets shipped. Now, if there's a number in the quantities column, then you know the gun is available to purchase. If no number, zero, then call me directly. I may be able to put one on hold for you. When purchasing a gun off this page, not only do you get the manufacturer's warranty, but you get the Davidson's guarantee that applies as well. And the Davidson's guarantee basically states that if any manufacturer defects are noticed or occur, they will either fix or replace the gun. So before you shop anywhere else for a firearm, check Aaron'sGunShop.com gallery of gun page. You just may find the gun you want at the price that's right for you. So Aaron'sGunShop.com. Now, ladies and gentlemen, before we close up the show, I'm very excited. One of my consultants, Patty, she is my editor for the Common Ground newsletter. And we just published that this month. It's up on our website, Aaron'sGunShop.com. Go to the blog page. And she's done a lot of work on it. She takes a lot of the courses. She's pretty hip to how things are going here. And she wants to get a female connection going when it comes to you ladies out there, a place to contact each other. And it's called Common Ground. And some of her headlines are Don't Be Afraid, topics of discussion, basically things that are important to you. They'll go over topics of discussion. You know, also, she likes to do a spotlight on equipment. So, like, every week she's going to get a particular gun. This particular week it was on this month it was on Smith & Wesson 9mm Shield. She'll give you a little breakdown and write-up of that particular gun, and you can check it out. She also has a section on here, the events that go on at Aaron's Gun Shop, with a long list of things, their times, what they are, who can participate, what they cost. And you need to check that out, too, to keep yourself up to date with what we're doing. There's also a section on the local gun shows and the live remotes that we'll be doing. A whole list of it so that you can set your schedules to come on out and be partakers of our live remotes. Get you on there, ask you some questions, tell us your ideas, give us some feedback, tell us what's going on. So I highly encourage you and recommend that you go check out our blog, the Common Ground newsletter, and it's at Aaron'sGunShop.com. When you get there, just go to the top and click on the blog page and read the newsletter for the month of January and become a participant of that newsletter. Start talking back and forth. Give us your ideas, comments, and thoughts. All right. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we've got just about a minute left here, and I want to finish it up by saying this. We have a lot going on at Aaron's Gun Shop, a lot on this radio show, and it can't happen without your support. If you truly like what we're doing, if you like what I'm doing here on the radio, all the information we're giving out, and you think it's beneficial to you, I need your support monetarily. I need your support phone calls. I need your support liking us on Facebook, buying the products. Go to our products page. We also have two new products coming up on the page. It's going to be the concealed carry badge that you can get with the backer so you can put it on your belt. And we also have my new holster design, the HARP holster for an AR pistol. This way to make all you people with AR pistols legal to carry in the state of Texas by using my holster. You can carry that pistol that cost $900 and carry it on your waist. So, ladies and gentlemen, with that, I want to thank you very much for all your phone calls, your emails, and your support. And until next week, keep your powder dry and God bless.
AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEN.